So good morning, everyone. As Mike said, you can kind of imagine my entire universe revolves around the second Tuesday of every month. Who's with me? Best day of the month, right? Absolutely. Schedule my vacations around that. I schedule my kids' birthdays around that. Sorry, little Timmy, your birthday's on Thursday this year. But it's great. So it's my favorite day of the month. That's the day we release all of our updates. Some of you call it Black Tuesday. Some call it Update Tuesday. It's the day I get to make the world a teeny bit better because we release all these security vulnerabilities. Of course, it never starts there. It starts much earlier, and it usually starts with a phone call. And let's face it, if you get a phone call from me, you're not happy about it because I never call you up and say, hi, it's Dustin, nothing's broken. If I call you up, something has gone wrong, and you and I will collaborate on creating this amazing solution. So I wanted to take you behind the curtain a little bit, show you a few things, some of the things that we've learned, some of the things that have changed over the last couple of years. I've been doing this almost 3 years now. I've got about 65 bulletins under my belt. That doesn't sound like a lot, but it is. Actually, I'm only 23 years old, so you can tell that it really wears out a person. But the first thing I want to talk about is the absolute best thing ever for an MSRC PM. It's not necessarily the best thing ever for our customers or for you. For me, though, it's the greatest thing. And then I want to highlight a few other areas for MSRC and servicing organizations that make it a little bit more challenging. And I'll leave it at that. So let's talk about the best thing ever. And this is the absolute best thing ever. A bug gets reported, or we find a bug in code review. We fix the bad code. We test the fix. We ship the update. The end. That is the absolute best thing ever. When did this happen? MS08067, vulnerability in server service could allow remote code execution. I don't get to title things very cool when I write my bulletins, but that's the title. Perhaps you've heard of the malware that used this exploit in its spreading and propagation. It was called Conficker. That was a much sexier title. So like I said, this is the greatest thing ever for me, but there are at least 10 million people globally who probably don't think this is the best thing ever. So we got this, and we immediately saw that this was a vulnerability that was remote code execution at system level, unauthenticated, on Windows XP and Server 2003. That's still our widest deployed operating systems. So 1, 2, 3, 4, worm. That immediately comes out as worm. So we went in, we looked at the code. Fortunately, it was a simple code bug. It was literally around 10 lines of code that we had to fix. We tested it quickly because we knew a worm was coming. And 17 days after we got notified, we shipped our update. And this was actually on a fourth Thursday instead of a second Tuesday. So it went out of band because it was that important. 69 days later, Conficker.b hit. Everything changed a little bit. But this was the greatest thing ever. And the reason why it's the greatest thing ever is because we've never needed to go back and modify the bulletin. We've never needed to go back and fix the package. Beyond, if you don't count Conficker, we had no post-release issues. That's kind of a stretch not to count Conficker as a post-release issue, but I'm asking for it. So that's the best thing ever for me. Now, this was almost 2 years ago to the date, because it was like the fourth Thursday in October that we shipped it 2 years ago, 2008. I haven't done one of these since then, and I've done a lot since then. So let's talk about a few other things. These are things that aren't quite as simple. Shared libraries, or how I learned to stop worrying and just call everyone. Some libraries we share between products. Some libraries we even share with third parties. If you don't know what I'm talking about, think of Active Template Libraries, ATL. Is anyone familiar with ATL besides me? Remotely, great. For those of you not familiar with it, it's a template library that we provide developers so they can build their own things like ActiveX controls. Now, let's just say, hypothetically, there's a typo in our template. Let's just say, again, hypothetically, that said typo could allow remote code execution through ActiveX controls that call into it in a specific way. Now let's say hypothetically that none of that is hypothetical and that's actually what happened. Now, here's an interesting question. If you publish a template, how many people use it? Yeah, we didn't know either. So I got on the phone and started calling people. I got on my email, and I literally sent at least one email to every servicing org in the company. Hi, my name's Dustin. You may have a problem. If you've ever used this template library, follow the following steps. The beautiful thing about this was, since third parties used it, we had to call them too. That was a little uncomfortable. Hey, Facebook. Yeah. Yeah, no, it's Microsoft. No, good, good. Yeah, hey, remember that code we shared? Yeah, you should get tested. All right, cool. Thanks. Rinse, repeat. We called everyone. We called people in Estonia. We called people throughout the states. People in just everything. I think we hit every continent but Antarctica. And we called them. We even, in the end, hosted a public tool for third-party applications so that they could get their own site tested. We did that through iCASI. And this is everything that we shipped. So yeah, I made a lot of phone calls. That took a little longer than 17 days. It took over a year to get everything out. One advisory, four bulletins, and numerous third-party updates later, and I still see exceptions come through for people who want to ship old ATL headers. So if you're one of those people, you don't have to raise your hand. Now you know why I rejected your SDL exemption trying to ship an old ATL header. Because we worked on this for a long time, and two of those bulletins still ended up going out of band. We actually shipped two of those bulletins at Black Hat last year. And if you've never shipped a bulletin from a suite in Caesar's Palace, I highly recommend against it. It sounds cool, but it's really not that much fun. So similar to shared libraries, we have schedule chicken, cross-group releases. Instead of a library shared between products, we actually have the same code in several different products. So we've got five different products that all ship the same bad code. How do we address this? Well, each of these different product teams has their own unique, we'll just say issues and leave it at that. They have their own testing cycles. They have their own ship patterns. They have their own ship priorities. They have different servicing models. Some are unique, some are cumulative. They have other things they want to work on besides what I'm calling them right now and saying, no, seriously, you've got to work on this right now. Our poster child for this is GDI Plus. This was MS-09062. So let's just real quick take a look at the affected software table for GDI Plus. This is our Windows operating system components. These are our .NET framework components. These are our Office components. These are our Visual Studio components. And not to be left out, we included forefront client security in this as well. That's all in the same bulletin, all shipping the same code, which means we all go or nobody goes. This is where the schedule chicken comes in. If we ship a bulletin, that immediately shines a gigantic spotlight on whatever component we're talking about. So if I say there's a problem in GDI Plus, everyone knows there's a problem in GDI Plus. We know this because we told them so. That if we miss something, if we miss Office in that, that exposes all of our Office users to the same vulnerability we just patched those four other products for. If we miss Forefront, same thing. So it's like landing five jumbo jets on a single runway at the same time. Everybody has to land at the same time. Otherwise, we're exposing customers to our risk. And that is something that, quite frankly, we don't like doing. And our customers have given us some feedback on this. They tend to agree with us. So it ends up with a much greater level of coordination. Five product groups, five times the level of coordination, five times the phone call with me talking to you. It's not as fun. And again, it didn't take 17 days to get this done. So here's an interesting note. We support security updates for products for 10 years. It's 2010 now. Think back to yourself in 2000. I want to see a show of hands. Who was still in college in the year 2000? Oh, that's good. Not as many hands as I thought. Who was still using dial-up? I was. Okay, that's embarrassing. He was still in high school. Anybody here? Oh, you people stink. Oh, man, I'm old. So 10 years. Occasionally, that leads us into a problem. How do we deal with issues that maybe don't work across all of our platforms? 10 years ago, we had a very different model than what we do right now. Windows 2000 is amazingly different from Windows Server 2008 R2, correct? The Office version that was current in 2000 is very different from Office 2010. What do we do in those situations? I love this title, by the way, too. You can laugh at that. So MS-09048 was one of my least favorite bulletins. It was a vulnerability in TCP/IP. We addressed several things in this bulletin, one of which was a code execution. If you don't know, our bulletins are always titled with the most severe thing. That's why it says RCE. But the particular bug that caused me problems was a denial of service bug. And it was a denial of service in the TCP protocol itself. So our update was really just changing the way that we dealt with TCP. The problem was it was a deep architectural change because it was TCP. And that architectural change really wasn't able to be backported to Windows 2000. Well, that's not entirely true. We could have backported it to Windows 2000, and in doing so, we would have broken every networking application that ran on Windows 2000. So we're left with two choices. Either don't fix Windows 2000, or fix Windows 2000 and break every application that does networking. So what's the right answer? Somebody shout it out. None of the above. I wish that were the right answer. No. Don't break Windows 2000. That's the wrong answer. So that leaves us with break Windows 2000. That's also the wrong answer. It was a trick question. There is no right answer. That is the beauty of my job sometimes, is occasionally we are left in scenarios where there is no right answer. There's no right way to deal with this. So how did we deal with this in this case? What we did is we did not fix Windows 2000. And here's our reasoning behind that. Since we're dealing with a TCP issue in the protocol itself, there are other things that our customers can do to protect themselves. In this case, something as simple as a stateful firewall added a significant level of protection. So we looked at that and said, hey, you know what? That's worth not breaking all our customers who are still on Windows 2000. But it's not exactly trivial. Did we catch a lot of heat on this? Yes. Did we still catch that heat when we explained the consequences of fixing it? Yes. So that one was fun. A little more challenging. It's kind of along that same lines. We have third-party interop concerns. In other words, when the customer calls me and says, you broke my what? I didn't even know I had that till you broke it. Every change we make has a cascading effect. That's one of the reasons we do a lot of testing. We do app compat testing, a lot of it. Doesn't catch everything, but it catches a lot. So I asked the app compat team for some numbers. Like, so how much do you really do? Even I was shocked to learn how much we really do. For a single Windows update, we can test up to 3,000 unique applications per client SKU. That means if I'm shipping an update for XP and Vista and Win7, there's potentially up to 9,000 unique third-party applications that are tested for every Windows bulletin. On the server side, it's a little less. It could be up to 900 if I hit server 2003, 2008, and 2008 R2. Either way, that's a lot of applications. And they're specifically chosen so that I know if we get a break in one, that means it's a break in that entire family. So all of these other applications I didn't test are also going to be affected. But every now and then, something slips through. So let's look at MS-1020, which was a vulnerability in SMB client. Everything we ship, as far as operating systems, has an SMB client on it. It's kind of important to us. So it's every OS. And it allowed remote code execution. Since it was client, not server, it was not wormable, but it's like the closest thing we have that isn't. So pretty important. Well, this is an SMB update. Great. We have protocol specs for that. Let's read them. Fortunately, they're written as clear as every other protocol spec out there. So the update changed the way that we validate a security descriptor that the client sends. Cool, that doesn't sound dangerous. Well, certain platforms send a zero for security descriptor length. Yeah, I know, I had to look it up too. I had no idea what that means when I found out. But it means that certain things, and when I say certain things, I mean SIFs, filing systems, like NetApp, Storage Area Networks, Cisco WAAS, which is, you'll have to ask Cisco what that stands for. They send a zero for that. Okay, so? So if you're looking at a Word document and you want to save it to an SMB share, you no longer can. That means you have to save your document that you open from an SMB share locally to your system and then manually copy it to that SMB share if you're on one of those systems. That's a corner case, right? We've never done that. I mean, have you? Okay, I have three times today. I know we all have. That's a very common scenario. So now we're left with a few options. The first option is re-release the entire bulletin with new packages for everyone. That sounds like a pretty good option to our customers. You broke me, you fix me. Okay, so that's cool. Here's what that means. It's SMB. It requires a reboot. It's SMB. It's on everything. When I re-release this bulletin within the first week, I personally reboot around 600 plus million machines. That's a reboot for every man, woman, and child in the United States, Russia, Canada, Mexico, and let's throw in France and Germany just for good measure. Who wants to reboot Russia? I have. Okay, so maybe that's not the best option. Second option, won't fix. Devs love this option. Well, it's not a quality problem necessarily in the security update. We are protecting people, and technically it's the third party's fault, so won't fix. That's a valid option, actually, and it gets tossed around a lot in cases like this. Our customers tend not to buy that one too much. See, because we have this thing called auto updates. Y'all heard of auto updates, right? Y'all have it turned on, right? Good. I'm going to pretend everyone nodded their head in agreement that they have auto updates turned on, because they're lovely. So we pushed them an update, and they lost functionality. We should probably do something about that. Yeah, so won't fix isn't really an option either. But in order to save 600 million reboots, what we did is we issued a hot fix for the affected customers. And we coordinated with the third parties who were affected to make sure that their customers got the hot fix in a timely manner. Again, this one took longer than 17 days. Actually, I think it might have taken around 17 days after the release and not before. But a lot of different phone calls were made to figure out what was going on and try and find the right thing to do, not only just for our customers, but for Microsoft as well. Our malware compatibility test lab. So we say, great, man, that's a ton of third-party apps we test for every update. What about malware? Do we test against that? Malware? Why would we test against malware? We're security updates. We don't care what malware does. We're not MMPC. We're not an antivirus thing. Well, it turns out earlier this year, I fixed a kernel bug. This is a pretty nice kernel bug, too. Elevation of privilege. You log on as a local user. You run a specially crafted program. You elevate to admin. Beautiful. Very reliable. So we fixed it. Our fix included changes to kernel registers. So here's a question. How many people have read the MSDN documentation on how to properly hook into the kernel through registers? Yeah, there isn't a lot out there because we don't want people to do it. It's really dangerous. Here's the thing. If you do it wrong, you're left in a blue screen situation where you can't boot at all. Into safe mode, forget it. No, you're done. So something else I learned back in February is that people who write malware don't read MSDN. I had no idea. I was shocked. So there was a little rootkit out there called Aleron. And it turns out that MS-1015 was one of the most reliable rootkit detectors ever released to the public. So one of the pieces of release, Second Tuesday is awesome. But I want to let everyone know that's not the end of anything. That's just a big milestone for us. Because we always go into monitoring mode. We're not perfect. We do make mistakes. if a cyber Pompeii situation occurs, I want to be there for it. I want to make sure it happens. So immediately we go into monitoring mode after release. Customers started calling in. Hey, I got a blue screen when I applied this update. Great, we got people who can help you. Get on the phone, and we have situations like this. What's the first step of triage, right? Reproduce it. We try to repro it in our lab. So we can't. More and more customers start calling in. We try different repro steps. No repro. Different hardware. No repro. Different scenarios and it wasn't the only bulletin we released that month. So different combinations. No repro. We stood on one leg, covered our right eye, jumped around three times. No repro. We're getting over, I can't remember the exact number, it's like around 80,000 reports of this. Somebody has repro, just not us. We're working 24/7 in three continents to get repro, and we can't. We finally have a customer called in who was geographically close to one of our support centers and said, hey, Microsoft, I got this problem. Our support center said, great, we'll buy your computer from you. What? What? No, we'll just buy your computer, replace it. Is that cool? Yeah. So we bought the user's computer, and we took it into our lab and immediately figured out, hey, this thing's got a rootkit on it. Think that matters? Turns out it did. So again, I can re-release to the world, or I can won't fix. It's not a quality problem in the security update, right? It's your fault you have a rootkit on there. We're doing you a favor by telling you. No. What we did is we updated the detection logic of this and future kernel bulletins. So the detection logic will actually look and see if you're in an unstable state, meaning you have a rootkit, and it refuses to apply the security update. Instead, it sends you off to a TechNet web page with a definition of the word rootkit and your next steps. And it's been so popular, they've asked us to do it in all future kernel updates. So we do. Well, those are some funny stories, but what does that all mean? Well, simple code bugs are largely a thing of the past. Conficker was 2 years ago. That was a simple code bug. Haven't really dealt with those much since. There are a few still out there. And in a way, this is really good. It means SDL is working. It means you guys are coding better stuff, and bugs are getting harder to find. But in their place are blended threats, things like IE's only affected if a third-party browser is installed alongside it, shared libraries and cross-group releases, problems that require an architectural solution. Those are hard. Protocols that are just insecure, DNS, I'm looking at you. And then components that haven't been fuzzed in years and years and years. We go to service them. We start our variant investigation. We started a variant investigation a couple months ago, and within the first 2 days, we had four other RCE bugs found. Those take a little longer than 17 days. So great. How can we avoid these phone calls and these servicing heads pains in the future? Well, first of all, do code reviews. Really. Don't just sign off and say, yeah, I reviewed it. Really look at it. The SDL is your friend, and that is important, because we will help. And threat modeling is also your friend. If you don't know how to threat model, Adam Shostak will be up here later. It's a cool card game. Love it. And there's been a lot of external pressures this year putting on us to ship faster. Some people say you have 30 days to ship. Some say 60, some say 6 months. We have our own measurements. We can't ignore that at all. The longer it takes to ship, the longer we have customers who are vulnerable to security problems. That's bad. However, quality of our updates cannot be sacrificed. And by that I mean our updates have to be secure and comprehensive. And our updates cannot break our customers. Those are what we call problems. One of my biggest jobs is ensuring that people maintain confidence in the quality of our security updates. Around 2003, we really started pressuring people to turn on auto updates. A weird thing happened. They did. So now I can literally reboot 400 million people tomorrow if I want. That's kind of a cool power, but it's also really, really scary. So we should fix faster, absolutely. We should have better processes in place to make sure that our investigation doesn't take a year for a simple code defect. But at the same time, to quote, be quick, but don't rush. So with that, I think I'm close to out of time, and I'll be happy to stick around and answer your questions. I thank you for your time, and please take this with the best meaning I have possible. I hope never to talk to you on the phone.